do you get over that like mental block that says, I can't spend the money because this may not work?
And that is a really, really tough thing to get over for sure. But it's, you know, you can't win if you don't try, right? Like you can't succeed if you don't take the step. So rather than look at it as losing a portion of the revenue, if you don't do the step, are you going to get any revenue, right? And for a lot of people, that's what ends up happening is you stop and you're like, well, I don't know because I can't do this, I can't do that. Well, now you have nothing.
If you've ever dreamed of launching something truly original, a business or a product that blends purpose, creativity, and is really outside the box, this episode is going to help you spark some ideas. We are talking to Sarah Furlong Warren, the Chief Content Officer and co-creator of Storyay.
Thanks so much for having me, Haley.
So I want to kind of jump right in and give listeners first an idea of what is Storyay. Is that how you pronounce it, Storyay?
Yes, it is. Yes. Yeah. So what it is it's a whole new way to get literacy into kids. We know that kids are not reading as much for pleasure as they used to. And we keep doing the same things over and over again and hoping for a different result. So rather than doing that, we thought, let's try doing it differently and see if we can spark some love of reading in kids that might not choose to pick up a book. So what Storyay does is it's trying to mimic how kids interact with content, which is short form. So rather than expecting them to pick up a book and read all the way through, they have the opportunity to do short letters that are basically a chapter of a book slowly over time. So it's mailed to them and it's all personalized and customized. So the letter is written to them from the main character. It has things that they like, things about them woven into the story. It's interactive with activities and they get bits of it along the way in 8 parts. And at the end, they have a whole personalized book that they were a part of versus passively reading a book in one go.
I love that. Oh my gosh, that's so cool. I really do like that. I was one of those kids who I did not like to read. I was in the you can't read readers groups. Like back then, it was like they really let you know that you were in the people who can't read group. Now they're probably not quite as open about that. And I used to have to join the library club and like all of that stuff. Once the reading clicked, I got really, really smart and started making great grades. But it was like reading is like integral.
Absolutely is. And kids aren't choosing to do it. So we're trying to hit kids on kind of both ends. So younger kids that are more advanced that want to do something that's a little bit more complicated would enjoy this, as well as kids who are, you know, reading is not their favorite thing. This is a great way to bring them into it in a really subtle sort of way. That's not a big commitment. Each letter is, you know, 12 pages long and it's got pictures and it's interactive. So it's not that wall of words that turns a lot of kids off of reading.
Oh my gosh, I think that's brilliant. Okay, so tell me, how did this evolve? Is this the first, like how old is your company?
It is brand new. It just launched a few weeks ago. We actually just completed a Kickstarter, so it's been out for a month. And stories will start to be delivered in the late spring, early summer. So it's brand new.
Okay, so tell me how did this come to be? What's the story of this Storyay?
So there's actually three of us that created Storyay together. So Lance was the person who came up with the idea. And this came from when his kids were younger. And he thought, wouldn't it be cool to get something in the mail that was just for you? Which we know kids still love getting something that's addressed to them. And it's, you know, something exciting. As adults, you know, mail isn't quite as exciting anymore because usually it's a bill. But for kids, it's really exciting when something is sent to them. So that was sort of the initial spark of Storyay. Then we kind of got together to figure out how do we turn this into that idea of kids getting something personal in the mail and make it into this really great storytelling experience. So that was sort of how we went from the initial idea of it to where we are today, which is we have 3 stories that are launching for different kids with different types of stories, but with that idea of how do we take that amazing moment of opening a letter just for you, but making it into an actual reading learning experience.
But what was the lead up to that?
So it's kind of a 2-part story. I came in relatively recently. I joined with Chris and Lance in May of 2024, so only less than a year. But they had been working on this for a bit. And kind of when I came in, we decided to really go after making really great stories. So the concept was there, the idea of mailing a multi-part story. And then my take on it was, okay, let's really focus on making that content really, really engaging. So basically, it's been, you know, about 9 months since we got together before we launched. So it's been really quick, really quick.
Small business owners don't think nine months is quick. They're like, I need to make money immediately, right? So it's nice that you took the time to lead up to it. So tell me, what is the launch strategy for Story A? Because obviously you're doing something right because you're on my podcast already, only a month in.
So our strategy started with the Kickstarter. So we really wanted to have that as a marketing tool to just help us get in front of people before we were ready to go to market. The stories are written, they're illustrated, we're still putting them together. So it's not 100% ready to go, but that was a great way to start getting it out there before we were ready to hit shelves to build up a little bit of early engagement. We've been doing other media along with that, some TV interviews, press releases, been picked up by various sources. And the Kickstarter gave us that reason. It gave us a reason to start to get in front of different audiences. Of course, digital social marketing has been a huge part of it. You know, recording various videos, having, you know, a big marketing plan of how we're going to reach different people to sort of start us and then sort of sustain us through.
So who are you actually targeting with your marketing?
Mm-hmm. So we're kind of targeting a few different groups. Primarily, we're looking at parents of kids in our age group, which is sort of 7+ at this moment. We're looking at them as our primary market. We're also looking at like grandparents, gift givers, who are looking to give something that is unique, that's different, that has, you know, a feel-good element to it. And we're also looking at homeschooling, because we know that homeschoolers are always looking for unique materials that they can use to help their kids learn in different ways. And this is a perfect sort of example of that as it comes over a period of time and it's interactive. So it gives lots of opportunities for learning.
Okay, love that. Okay, so your delivery of the books are different than normal. So how did you account for that? Because I know there's a lot of probably listeners who are like, I have this really unique idea. This, you know, maybe a different delivery vessel like you guys. Like it's a book, but it's personalized. It's sent over time. It's sent in the mail. That's like not, I don't think that's happening anywhere. So how does that play into your strategy for marketing?
Absolutely. It requires a lot more education. We can't just take the leap directly from this is neat and you're going to love it. We have to fill in the blank of why it's different, why we did it, and what's unique about it. So it does require multiple steps. So it is a bit of a more intense process in terms of converting somebody to a sale, because it's not a quick one-liner. This is a great picture book your kids are going to love. I know what a picture book is. I know my kids like picture books. Done. We have to be like, this is what it is. This is why your kids want it. And then try and go to the next step. So it does require an extra level of information. This is something I've worked on a lot over the years. My background is in kids advertising and entertainment. So doing something that's kind of that category buster, as we like to call it, which is you've heard of this, you've heard of this. We put those together to make something new. And that's really kind of what we're trying to sell is like, hey, subscription boxes, you know what those are like, books for kids. We've combined those into this unique offering to try and use things that are familiar to express something different.
Okay. Yeah. So tell me, how do you take that leap? Are you doing this full time?
So this is, I own my own company full time. So I work for myself and I have for 13 years. So this was something that I could fold into what I was already doing as it's adjacent because I'm a full-time writer. So this sort of nicely folded into what I was doing as well. None of us are doing this full-time at the moment. Our hope is for it to become a full-time venture once kind of gets up and going, but it is something that is part of my full-time day because it is related.
You're a children's books author, right? And you've got a couple books out there. Do you want to give the books a little plug?
Sure. So I have a number of books for a number of ages, and writing for neurodivergent and reluctant readers has always been my favorite thing. My most popular series is My Every Brain is Beautiful, which explains to kids neurodiversity. So it explains we're all different, our brains are all unique, and you're perfect the way you are. And then I have books that go into specific diagnosis, like, your beautiful brain in autism, your beautiful brain in ADHD, to help kids better understand themselves or others around them. So that's really been a passion for me, is working to explain to kids that there's nothing wrong with them. There's no deficits and red flags. Your brain is just different. And that was, neurodivergent readers tend to be some of the reluctant ones, some of the ones that don't choose to pick up a book because dyslexia and just that like commitment to that many words. So that's how those two kind of came together for me, was that passion for those kids and then aligned with this type of creativity and this new way of telling stories.
Okay, so the books that Storie is using, did you write those or are you publishing those for somebody else? Or how does that work?
They are all written by me. So I wrote all of them. We're hoping is to be able to expand and bring in additional authors to tell different stories, or to turn their book that already exists into a storie. So for us to turn it into our format, yeah, that's our hope, is to be able to be like, hey, you've got a great book. Let's turn it into this personalized, slow delivery system and turn them into a storie themselves. But the three we're launching with were all written by me, but we've used a bunch of different illustrators. So every story has a totally different look because it's got a different illustrator who worked on it. And the looks range from something that is kind of more that 6, 7-year-old right up to tweens, because we've used, comic book illustrators and, children's illustrators, so that you get lots of different feels to try and reach different kids.
Okay, so I'm always interested in why somebody took a certain route in their life. So, you becoming a children's author, which led you to Storie, and your focus on neurodivergent readers, reluctant readers, where does that passion for you come from?
So I've worked in children's entertainment for almost 20 years. So I've always specialized in kids. I went to school for what was called the radio and television program at the Toronto Metropolitan University, with a specific focus on kids entertainment. From there, I actually worked internally at a toy company called Spin Master, in their advertising department, writing toy commercials. I've been doing that forever, and that's still kind of my day job. And then I wanted to start to write more books. I wanted to do something a little different, and my son, who is 10 now, is autistic. I'm neurodivergent as well. He's autistic, ADHD, dyslexia, the whole laundry list after his name. And when I was trying to explain to him what those things meant, I couldn't find any resources that I didn't think would make him feel bad about himself, which is where it sort of sparked me to create those. And then it turned into, okay, explaining is great, but now how do I create content that a brain that doesn't necessarily want to focus in the same way would enjoy, which took me into Storie. So it's all sort of been pieces together of the same kind of puzzle, which is all about entertaining kids first and foremost, but entertaining those kids who don't necessarily fall right into the center of everything's targeted to them, right? Like, not everything is written to these kids. So how do we create content that any kid could enjoy, and especially those kids who aren't necessarily, the subject of stories could get a kick out of?
Yeah, that's great. I love that story. So sorry, everybody, you probably noticed my voice sounds a little harsh. I've been sick this week and I had to postpone Sarah's interview and I couldn't do it again because I really wanted to talk to her and I thought if somebody's gonna get me out of bed, it's gonna be a creative storyteller like Sarah. So that's why I sound like this, and she's going to do most of the talking today. Okay, so let's get to, so you owned your own business for 13 years, then you started Storie. So you've got kind of two things going on. What would you give as advice, twofold? One for somebody who's moving into is it solopreneurship, like your own business? Is that a solo, or do you have a staff?
No, my business was incorporated. It still is. I still own it. Whirly Gig Creative is my business. And when you're starting something, your own thing, I think it's important to really know who you are and who you're talking to, and not trying to be everything to everybody, which can sometimes be one of those things that when we go out, it's like, oh, I really want this to succeed, so I'll take everything on, right? Sure, I can do that. Sure, I can do this. Yes. And then you get to the point where you're not actually doing what you wanted to, and you're overwhelmed as well. So a good piece of advice is when we started Whirligig, kids and family was our focus. We wanted to do stuff that was focused on kids and family. And if it didn't fall into that bucket, we didn't pursue it. And that worked amazingly well and still does. That sort of focus of who we are and what we stand for. And that continues into Story A because it's the same. That is still where my passion falls, is kids and family and entertaining them. And I think that having that kind of focus allows your business to grow and succeed because you don't get sort of broken off into little bits and doing all these other jobs, and then no one knows why to hire you or who you are.
Oh my gosh, I have seen that a lot. And actually, when I first started, I was really good. I was very, very, and I don't know if you ran into this too. So my business is 8 years old now, so a little younger than yours. When I started, I was so focused. I was like, this is who I'm talking to. This is what I'm doing. I'm doing brands for small businesses. That's it. Local businesses, stuff like that. And then I'm just coaching. But then as I got into it, I was like, oh, well, I'm kind of a little bit not bored, but not as challenged as I wanted to be. So then I'm like, oh, maybe I'll take on some, bigger businesses, and maybe I'll do some of the work. And then everything blew up because it was just me, and I had all these different things. It wasn't No process, no, I had to literally stop taking clients for 6 months because I was just had too much on my plate, and nothing was super connected to each other. So your advice would have served me well, even though I knew it. Sometimes but you do the opposite.
I think we all know it. That's the hard part. We all know the advice, but following it when it's yourself can be really difficult because sometimes if you're sitting there, it's also knowing the ebbs and flows of your business because sometimes you're sitting there and you're in that moment, you're like, I'm not busy. I need to take on anything coming my way. But truly, a lot of times that's just, every year, if you looked back, it's like, this is always a quiet month for me and I know it's going to come back. And then you take on that job that isn't totally aligned and you're like, oh no. Now I've got to finish that, and I'm overwhelmed because my business is coming back. So part of it is kind of sitting in it and being okay with the fact that it's coming back. I'm just going to work on something for my business, inside my business, while you're waiting for it to move on to the next stage.
Yeah, and that precious time to work on your business, that is what is going to catapult you. So if you're always in the busy work and you're never actually creating a strategy or something new, like Story A, something that's going to redefine, the market a little bit, you're not going to get as far as you want to get. So you have to take those slow periods, take those with gratitude that you now have some time. Instead of just being distracted from your goal. So tell me again. So let's go back to the launch, because I think sharing about a launch is important, because a lot of people don't understand the amount of work and effort that goes into launching something. And I know that, you said they kind of start, you started in May, so you've been doing this for quite a while, like 9 months. What exactly goes into launching something like this? And what kind of results are you seeing so far?
So to launch it, we really had to start at the core of what is it? And because it was a little different, taking that time to truly define where we were going to sit in the market, who would be interested in us and what we were going to offer them. Figuring out that actual brand, like who are we, and what is that going to be, which takes some time. Then it was really figuring out what that content is, sitting in that for a bit and figuring out how it's going to work because we're offering personalization and customization and interweaving activities. We really had to think about what we were actually going to offer in the marketplace as opposed to just, let's get this out there so we can start selling it. We really wanted to sit with it and make sure that what we were giving was going to be a premium product. After that, it was okay, nobody's ever heard of us. How are we going to explain this to them? We need to start setting up our socials, even though we're not ready to go out into the world with just pure messaging of what, storytelling and the importance of reading and the importance of this, like just to kind of let people know that we existed. So people look back we didn't start the day we wanted to start, right? There's a history there. There's some trust that we haven't just dropped out of the sky and started today.
How long did you do that kind of pre-launch social media presence?
So we started our social media back in the fall, around October, we started posting. And we started just kind of having that up and about, and it wasn't constant. It was, you know, just having it there, you know, Facebook and Instagram and TikTok, and just sort of having us exist, getting a page for a website up so that if people searched us, something came up. Then sort of we were getting ready for the Kickstarter. So kind of just letting people know it was going to be coming. And then a week before, we did a live TV segment in order to kind of get a bit of a bump to it and also give us some great content to be able to show people in action what this is, as well as get that, you know, everybody can post on social, but traditional media still does have some weight because it's being vetted by somebody outside of you just saying that, right? So getting some of those media hits was really important to us kind of leading into the Kickstarter to then be able to be picked up by, you know, other, you know, newspapers carried articles about us and stuff like that, which wouldn't have been possible without a little bit of traditional media to give us, you know, that we existed, that we're real.
Yeah. And is that something that you personally executed yourself and reached out to contacts? And yeah.
Yeah, I do a lot of, I have a, you know, a relatively big Instagram account I have for a long time that just is about, you know, kids and fun and mom life and et cetera. So I have, you know, done a lot of traditional media where I've gone on to give tips for, you know, family travel or here's fun activities to do on March break, that kind of thing. So because of that, I was able to reach out and get us, you know, a segment on a morning show prior to launch to give us that little bit of a push. And like I said, to just have that to be able to share around, which was an important thing when no one's ever heard of you, to see like, oh, the product does exist. You've been talking to somebody, it's been on television. It just makes people feel a bit more comfortable when you're trying to be a brand new anything. That that feeling that you are real is important to portray.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So then what was the next part? So you got the PR in, and you did a pre-launch kind of getting known, building some credibility just in the space.
Yep. And then the next thing was putting it out on the Kickstarter. So that went up, you know, early February and was up, just closed this morning. So it was basically, you know, it was up and just sort of once it was up, really pushing to it, doing lots of content that showed the different aspects, running ads, you know, upping our media spend as the time continued, because we had to let it learn, right? Like it had to learn who was interested in it, who was clicking on it, so that we can start feeding it to the right people, which takes some time because it's not, you don't want to just spray it everywhere because now you're spending money on people who are never going to be your people. So, you know, starting small and then increasing it as we were starting to see who was clicking through. And now from there, we are going into basically our pre-launch mode again, because the product, now that it's done its Kickstarter, there's going to be a bit of time before we actually have the product ready to go. So pre-sales for anybody who didn't get in on the Kickstarter, but is still interested in getting in before we go live.
And so the Kickstarter is kind of like a, like explain what the Kickstarter, what does that mean, Kickstarter?
Yeah. So the Kickstarter, the idea of it is that you can be part of helping bring a product to life. So you pledge a certain amount, or you, you know, I'm going to get the, you know, a story package, or I'm going to buy the box set, or I'm going to do a, you know, interview with the, you know, get a one-on-one with the creators, that kind of thing. And you pledge money, which then goes to us to help us continue funding the project. So at the end of it, if you collect the funds you're looking for, you get them, and then the people get whatever they backed. So if they backed a backpack with Story A on it, we send that out to them. So it's a way to kind of close that gap on both funding as well as get a great marketing push, and something that we can continue using, like successfully funded on Kickstarter becomes something that again helps legitimize you if you're brand new, which we are.
Okay, I have never heard of Kickstarter. Is it Canadian?
It's American. So there is a bunch. There's a ton of different sites that offer this. Kickstarter is kind of the main one for creative projects. But part of it is what you just said there, which was educating people on how a Kickstarter works. Because, you know, you click on it, you think you're going to buy it, and it's like, oh, I see now. I don't just buy it and it comes to me. I make a pledge. Once it closes, we fulfill the pledges, that kind of thing. So It's a different way to get some funds into a company as well as get a really good marketing push because it gives a reason to talk about it before it's launched.
What a great concept.
Yeah, it's like a pre-launch, but then you get email addresses for people that were interested. So you get to sort of build in that audience. It's a reason to talk about it. And now we have those people. So as we move into our next phase, we already have a built-in audience of people who were interested through our Kickstarter.
Oh, I love that. So do you have like an email strategy going on with this?
We do. Yes. So part of it was collecting those email addresses, which are so precious, especially as we know with social, it's, you know, you kind of spray and pray, like you put it out there, you have no idea who's going to see it. You could have a massive audience and it could be shown to nobody. So getting those email addresses is incredibly important. Throughout the campaign, you know, we were having our regular emails out to anybody who was following just with updates. Here's what's going on, all that kind of stuff. And now we'll continue that with information about the stories to really start to educate people who were interested of, here's a little snippet from this story. Here's a bit from this one. Did you catch us in this newspaper? Did you read this article? We're also finding a lot of really great sources of information that we can share with people. Like, you know, kids are 40% more likely to read something if it's personalized. So that's the kind of stuff we can send out to people who have expressed interest in us to reassure them as to why we're unique and why it's a good choice for their children.
Okay. I love that. Okay. So you've got your email list, you've got your launch. Okay. So how did your Kickstarter go? You say it's ending soon?
It ended this morning. So it ended like literally a few hours ago it ended. So it was fully funded, which is great. So that means that, you know, it was a successful launch and now we can keep it up. So people, until we have our store up and going, people will be able to go to the Kickstarter and still do that sort of like, you know, they'll be able to order off the Kickstarter site and then we'll transition to our website that's almost complete. But the nice thing about doing a Kickstarter, it also helps us learn what works and what doesn't work so that as we build out our website, we can look at what did convert, what didn't convert, what were people most interested in to make sure our website is meeting the needs as opposed to putting it all into the website, putting it out there and hoping for the best. We were able to do some learning before we fully committed to it, which has been incredibly helpful.
Oh my gosh, yes. Okay, that's great. And then, so it sounds like you've actually thought through the strategy in terms of launch, but then the full circle. So I usually, for those of you who haven't heard me talk about the ACRE growth system, it's ACRE, so attraction, conversion, retention, and expansion. And so it's like this full circle that you need to figure out. So I know that of course you're doing the attraction right now. And then you've got your website going, so you're working on conversion. So what is the plan? Do you have it filled out in terms of like that full circle? Do you know what's going to happen?
Absolutely. We actually do. I never heard it put that way. And I love that actually, but yes, we do. So for the retention part of it is we have multiple stories. So our hope is that if a child gets into, let's say, Enchanted Forest and they start there, when they're almost done it, they'll get an offer. Hey, did you know we also have Lost in Space and Fate of the Feline? Did you want to continue on with that? So hoping that once they're into it, their parents are seeing them reading, they're enjoying it, that they can seamlessly move into our next story. And then as an expansion, in the fall, we're going to be launching for younger children. So right now we're kind of at that 7+. So kids that are sort of reading more thorough stories, we're going to go more almost like a picture book style for younger kids that has the same interaction, personalization, but the stories are written to a younger audience. So our hope is that anybody who, you know, was like, oh, I love this idea, but my kid's not quite ready for it yet, or their little sibling would love it, to have that additional to expand their audience even further. And then after that, we're going to go up in age. So we're going to go more for those kind of teens who are, you know, going to do it a little bit differently, because the storytelling style needs to be different for every age group. It's not just a matter of making a story harder or easier. The actual way we're telling stories needs to change, but that is on our radar already to start expanding so that we don't lose out on people who like our concept, but don't have a kid in that age range.
Okay. Oh my gosh. I love having conversations with people who have like actually, you know, planned out this launch. So you met your goal for your Kickstarter, which is fabulous. What advice do you have for somebody who is maybe on the fence. So they're passionate about something, but they maybe don't have the background that you do, because you have a marketing background. So that makes it a lot easier for people like you and I to start businesses. What would you recommend for somebody who maybe doesn't, but really has a great idea?
Having a great idea is the most important thing, and so is just starting. Even if you're not sure where it's going to go, start talking about it, posting about it, attracting other people to it. Because one thing I see all the time is people with a lot less experience than you are doing what you want to be doing because they just decided to start. If you can, you want to be part of somebody who can do what you don't do. Right? So see if you can find somebody who is a marketing person or somebody who is adjacent to you and bring them in on it or consult with them and at least get some opinions. You cannot do it all. That's one thing I've learned over the years is trying to do it all is a recipe for failure. We always see these courses DIY this and DIY that. You can't possibly do it all and do it all well. So be okay with getting help and finding people to assist you along the way. But don't stop just because you can't do it all. Don't not do your great idea because you yourself cannot do the whole thing. Find support to get it done.
I really like that. And I think that, there is this idea of you can shoestring a business, obviously. My business is pretty shoestringed, but I have a consultancy. I don't have any hard costs. It's not like I'm have a material product or have a big investment that needs to be made. But for a lot of people, that initial thought of giving up part of the revenue or paying money that they haven't earned yet. How do you get over that mental block that says, I can't spend the money because this may not work?
And that is a really, really tough thing to get over for sure. But it's, you can't win if you don't try, right? Like you can't succeed if you don't take the step. So rather than look at it as losing a portion of the revenue, if you don't do the step, are you going to get any revenue, right? And for a lot of people, that's what ends up happening is you stop and you're like, well, I don't know because I can't do this, I can't do that. Well, now you have nothing. Whereas if you're like, you know what, I'm willing to give up 20% of my company. Or, take out a small loan and pay somebody this amount to get a really good website and a really good marketing plan and then move forward. Now you're moving forward versus just saying, I can't do it all myself, therefore I'm not going to do it. So that's sort of, my feeling on it. Or choose something you can do yourself. If you do have that one really cool skill set or you are a consultant, pick something like that to start with. And it's hard to market if you don't have any background in it, which I mean is what we're talking about. But if you do have something really cool, just start doing it and then build your team around you.
Yeah. And I think too, and you had mentioned this at the beginning of our conversation, the very first step is the brand, right? It's the brand strategy. How are you different? What are you offering? Who are you offering to? How are you positioned in the market relative to competition? What's your personality? What's your values? All of that stuff is the very beginning to me. You need to kind of have an idea of what you want to sell, but outside of that, you need to get that brand ironed out because that will fill in the gaps for everything else.
Absolutely. And how you talk about it and how you explain it, the voice, the tone, the look, as soon as you can get those things together, people understand where to place you. And if you don't have those bits, you can have the best idea in the world, but if people can't quickly look and be like, oh, I get it, this is who you are, this is what you stand for, this is what you offer, it's going to be really hard to convert to sales or clients or whatever you're trying to do without that strong brand.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, I think that's all my questions. I think what you're doing is absolutely amazing. It's super cool. My kids are a little bit older now, so they probably won't read anything that I recommend. They're like in university and finishing high school. But I think it's awesome, and I know for sure that I would have been the mom to jump on that immediately. My kids would have loved it. So I'm so excited to see what you're doing. And you're out of, are you out of Oakville? Where are you based?
We're in just outside of Toronto.
Are you in Oakville?
I am, yes.
Okay, cool. I used to live in Oakville. That's why I ask. I did.
I wasn't sure where you were located, and that was a very specific spot. So that's why I was like, Toronto area.
We're neighbors, really. Anyways, thank you so much. Thank you for sharing your story. Oh, one more quick question. Just because I like to like hammer the point home to people. How much marketing time, as a percentage of overall time, do you think you're going to need to spend to make this product be a success?
A lot. marketing is more important than the product itself, truly. You can have the best product in the world, and if nobody knows about it or nobody understands it, it doesn't matter. So making a great product is very important. Marketing is more important. So once now that our product exists, I would say probably 70% of our time will be on marketing it. Alongside, making sure the next products and this and that, but it's a huge amount of it because if no one knows about us, no one's going to buy it.
Thank you. I think that a lot of people they have a passion, right? And then like maybe they like you, they want to write children's books or they have this passion, but that's all they want to do. And they don't realize that when you start a business and you want something to actually work, when you start a business and you want something to actually work, your job now is to either hire a marketer or become a marketer because otherwise, it's not going to go. Thank you so much, Sarah. Have a really great day. It's been an absolute pleasure. Definitely worth getting out of bed for.
Well, thank you so much. I hope you continue to feel better, and it was lovely chatting with you today.
You too.